Albert Collins with his song Master Charge, talking about charging it up, pulling out the plastic, looking good in the jeans. Yeah, that's part of consumer awareness, right? We've been talking about consumer awareness, and you can't talk about consumer awareness without talking about, of course, debt, right? All of that debt that you consume when you're buying all those favorite things. And it's a fun part of being a consumer, but it's also a really serious part of being a consumer, right? You have to really know how to manage debt. So we're going to be talking about that in the next, 30 minutes or so. I have some special guests in the studio with me who are going to answer a lot of questions as well as give you some resources. So let me do some introductions here. Director of Statewide Poverty Action Network, Marcy Brower, is in the studio. Hello, Marcy.
Hello. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for coming. As well as attorney at the Northwest Justice Center, Julia Kellison, is also with us.
Hi, Sonia. Thank you for having me.
And also in the studio, Director of Media Relations at ClearPoint Credit Counseling Solutions, Bruce McClary.
Thanks for having me on the show, Sonia.
And last, Sally DeLeon. She is a person who has been a victim of shady practices in the debt industry, and she's also testified with one of the House bills that unfortunately didn't pass, but we'll talk a little bit about your story. Thank you for being here, Sally.
Oh, thanks for having me, Sonia.
Okay, so Bruce, I'm going to start with you because I want to establish just some basics about managing debt. Talk about some of the pitfalls and maybe some of the common debt traps consumers get themselves into.
Well, the main thing about going into debt, consumers really need to be careful and understand the terms and conditions of what they're getting into. And in a lot of cases, borrowing happens at the most inconvenient times financially for a lot of people. Usually, a lot of times it's associated with an emergency, unfortunate circumstances, a life transition that can be very difficult to manage. And when sometimes savings is depleted and the conditions seem really urgent, so a lot of consumers go into these things feeling pressured, feeling rushed. And that leaves them at their most vulnerable state. And a lot of times lenders see that when somebody comes in and they're desperate to borrow money. And in some cases, consumers are taken advantage of in those situations because they seem desperate and they seem to really – the urgency is there. So the lender says, okay, I'm just going to push the worst possible terms and steamroll them with all these fees and, you know, take advantage of this situation. So what consumers need to be prepared for is just to, I guess, to take a few moments, take a deep breath, look at the situation, look at their own resources, and see what they'll be able to do. First of all, how much do you need to borrow, and what are your resources for paying it back? Those are the two main questions. Why are you borrowing the money? And then give yourself the opportunity and really, I guess, give yourself the benefit of shopping around. Don't assume that because of a certain circumstance in your life or because of certain situations that you will only qualify for, you know, these terms or those terms. Shop around. Go to prime lenders. Talk to people. Be competitive about your research to find the best rate and the best terms in your situation. And then make a decision that's right for you financially. But always be thinking of the future in those situations. And don't overextend yourself by pushing the terms of the loan to the limit of your financial capacity, to your capacity to repay, because things could potentially even get worse for you financially. And you want to be able to continue repaying that debt, even under the worst possible conditions, so that things don't spiral out of control.
Well, Marcy, I want to turn to you because he brings up a very good point. A lot of times people are in emergency situations and people feel like they don't have the resources. They don't know where else, what else to do and where else to go. And when you talk about lending, predatory lending is really something, I mean, it's pretty pervasive. But I know that Washington State has kind of led the charge in terms of some legislation. But talk a little bit about predatory lending practices, if you could kind of set the stage for that a little bit. And then I want you to also talk about some of the legislation and policies around predatory lending here in Washington State.
Just a small question there.
Just a small question.
Just a small one, not a big deal. Well, I mean, I think that we've seen a lot over the last few years in particular, a lot of sort of loosening up of lending laws, of lending policies. We've seen that nationwide. We've seen that in multiple states. And so, you know, I think that there's, we saw it with the housing crisis. We saw it sort of with subprime lending and whatnot that happened. But then I think that we also saw that a lot more locally, sort of the rise of payday lending. Washington is fortunate enough to not have things like car title lending. But we see it in all sorts of other things. And so, you know, I can sort of segment off one side of predatory lending, which is sort of that payday lending thing. And really that's about, you know, people in tough situations where bad things happen and lenders come in and take really bad advantage of people who are struggling to get by. You know, I think what makes it predatory is that you get a kick in the teeth at the same time that you're really struggling to figure out how to pay your bills or your regular expenses. So that's one side of it. But I think that what we're seeing now is that there's new emerging stuff that's coming out. And it's sort of emerging sort of in the wake of the housing crisis and the financial crisis, which is that Americans are holding more debt than they ever had before. And there are new types of companies that are coming in to take advantage of that. They're buying old debt. They're, you know, offering you these debt settlement scams. And, you know, I'm actually not going to talk about that. I'm going to let Sally talk a little bit more about that, I think. But so that's kind of the lay of the land, that there's a lot of companies that are taking advantage of how much people are struggling these days.
And I do want to get a little more specific, though, like with like the zombie debt, because I know that's an example of one of the things that, you know, companies are now doing that is definitely a practice that I don't think maybe a lot of people are aware of. So could you talk a little bit about how that works and what that picture looks like when you're approached with a situation and it turns out to be a zombie debt scenario?
Right. Right. So zombie debt is... in addition to having a great name.
Right, zombie debt.
Right, it is literally...
From the dead.
Yeah, it is literally old debt that is coming back from the dead to haunt people, which I know sounds like it shouldn't be able to happen. You know, zombies are supposed to... Go away, right? They're supposed to be, you know, cool things that are on HBO and Showtime. They're not supposed to be things that impact your financial life. But, you know, I mean, I think really what that is what happens is companies, third-party debt buyers, go and buy debt for pennies on the dollar from debt collection agencies, et cetera, and then they turn around and attempt to collect on it. But there's no way of knowing whether you actually owe the debt, whether that debt is past the statute of limitations, whether you even owed it in the first place or your name was just similar to somebody else who owed it. And I think one of the scary things is that, you know, I think most consumers, you know, I would put myself in the same category. If a debt collection agency came to me and said, you owe this money from when you were in college, I would be like, I probably do. You know, maybe I lost track of it. I don't know. And even though the statute of limitations is up on it, as soon as I start making a partial payment on it, I now owe the full debt, whether I owed it actually or not. But I think that most consumers want to do the right thing and they want to pay their bills. And there's these companies that are taking advantage of that. And I think that that's really where we try and step in and say, we need to do something to regulate this. This is not okay.
Yeah, that is definitely not okay. And Sally, I know you have an experience with it. So I wanted you to talk a little bit about your scenario and what happened to you and how it felt to be kind of targeted in such a, I don't know, sleazy way, if you will.
So are we talking about the zombie debt or are we talking about predatory lending?
Whichever situation applies to you, I understand the zombie debt scenario applies to your story. So yeah, however you want to tell it.
Okay. So, I guess a brief synopsis of what even led me to the debt is, I survived a 10-year abusive relationship and, I went from having a 2-income home to a 1-income house, and then I also had a 3-1 ARM on my home loan. I found out the hard way what that meant, what a 3-1 ARM is. And then with that said, my home loan went from $1,600 a month to $2,800 a month after the 3-year fixed rate mortgage was done. So every year it went up. So I went from $1,600 to $1,800 to $2,300, then up to $2,600, and then it just kept going up from there till I finally threw the towel down and said, no, I can't do this. So the order of priority changed. It became a matter of feeding my kids, you know. Anyways, so zombie debt. So with that happening, I went from paying off my bills as much as I can to I couldn't do it anymore to filing for bankruptcy. Bally's is the one example that sticks to my mind because it's been sold 7 times, literally. Wow. 7 times. It's the Valley Fitness. I don't
right.
know if you've heard of them. Mm-hmm. So then I keep calling them, telling them, no, I don't owe this debt anymore because it was part of my bankruptcy. And 3 months later, I would have another creditor. And then when I do get a chance to get questioned about it, they would tell me that no, you still owe this debt because it says it right here, and this is where it's coming from, and this is how it goes. And I would argue with them and say, no, and then the moment I tell them that I have an attorney and here's his name and number, then that's when they either A, hang up the phone, or B, take the number from me. And, I mean, as far as predatory lending, I've experienced that as well with a car. I was telling Bruce about it in the waiting area that I needed a car to get to work. You know, I mean, that's why people get into, you know, into debt. You know, it's a constant.
It's about a need.
Yeah, it's about a need. Right. I need to feed my kids. In order for me to feed my crying kids that are hungry, I have to go to work. And how do I get to work? Well, that's great. The bus is there, but it's not always reliable, especially with all the cutbacks that we're going through with Metro. And we won't talk about that. That's not what we're talking about
today.
That's another show. Right, for sure. So I went to CarPros and paid 36% on my interest on my car.
Wow. That makes me speechless. Well, I have to get Julia in over here as well. So I do want to turn to you. With a situation like Sally's, you know, and others, you know, how do you help people, you know, when they come to you with that kind of scenario? And also, I know we've kind of mentioned medical lending as well, or medical debt, excuse me. And so I do want you to touch on that. But if you could kind of take that on in terms of someone comes in your office like Sally, what do you tell her? How can you help her?
Sure. So I work for Northwest Justice Project. We're a civil legal aid program. We provide free legal services to low-income folks throughout the state of Washington through 13 offices and through a 20-attorney statewide intake line called CLEAR. In our King County office that I work in, we handle lots of different cases, family law, landlord-tenant, consumer benefits. I'm in our consumer unit, and we run a debt clinic, and we see lots of folks like Sally. We are at the King County Courthouse in Seattle 1 to 3 every Tuesday. Walk-ins welcome, and it's a debt defense collection clinic, and we help folks answer lawsuits, respond to predatory lending issues that come up, and we do see a lot of medical debt. And what we're often in the position of doing is either helping folks answer a lawsuit for debt collection and asserting a charity care defense, and I can talk about what charity care is. Because low-income folks have some really powerful rights related to charity care to help them pay bills if they can't afford it. And unfortunately, it's too well kept a secret for those services. So what we'll do is we'll come in and suspend the lawsuit and allow the person to apply for charity care from a hospital. So charity care is a creature of state law, and it applies to public and private hospitals. And those hospitals have a very affirmative mandate under state law to go out and seek out people who can't afford the care and see if they need to apply for charity care from their hospital. And it applies to hospital-based charity care-eligible services. So there are some carve-outs to it. But they're supposed to tell people about it and let people apply at any time. So at any time, even if it's gone to collections, even if they've been sued, you can still call up the hospital, ask the attorney for the debt collector themselves, I want to apply for charity care. And what they should get is a charity care application from the hospital. It'll ask about income and resources. It'll ask you to supply information to prove that up, if you can, pay stubs, proof of employment income, proof of benefits. And what you want to do is fill it out, turn it in by the deadline, usually about 14 days, make a copy of that application, and send it to the hospital and make sure they get it and follow up.
That is a well-kept secret.
It is. And it really – we serve folks 0 to 200% of the poverty level, and we've seen folks relieved of thousands of dollars of medical debt in one fell swoop by using charity care. So folks, no matter where you're getting health care, be it at a hospital or even at non-hospital-based services, just ask – do you have charity care or do you have financial assistance? And because even if you're not getting charity care at a hospital, other providers might have financial assistance programs that you can apply for. So that's what I would urge people to do to make sure they get the coverage they need. It can cover even if you have insurance. So the hospital is supposed to vet you when you come in and say, do you have private insurance? Do you have Medicaid or Medicare, public insurance? And if not, they can let you apply for charity care. But it can also cover things that aren't covered by those insurers on co-pays that you might not be able to afford. It's a really powerful tool, and folks need to know about it because we see that some hospitals aren't really living up to the mandate under state law to get the word out about charity care.
Well, Bruce, I know you also kind of know this this whole game also from the collection standpoint because you were a collector. So talk about it from the other side of the aisle, if you will, and yeah, I mean, because I know as someone who has been in, you know, in a tough situation before from being unemployed, getting those calls from collectors can be so stressful and just so – nothing can make you feel worse than someone calling you and beating up on you on the phone.
Yeah, that's true, and it's a very intimidating process, and that's why a lot of people strictly just avoid talking to debt collectors because they're afraid when they pick up the phone it's just going to be just a telephone beatdown, basically. And people are afraid of that, and a lot of people don't really clearly understand their rights when they're dealing with debt collectors. And there's a law, it's called the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, and I think everybody needs to know. Look it up online. You can look it up at FTC.gov. It's the Federal Trade Commission site. Everybody should know their rights when dealing with a debt collector, and that clearly explains exactly what your rights are, about when they can call you, when they can contact you, what they can say, what they can't say. A lot of debt collectors that go outside of the boundaries, they'll threaten you with things that they can't really do, like arrest. They can't arrest you for the debt that you owe. They can't say that they're going to take you to court. They can't, you know, do all of that. But a lot of the claims they make, it's very threatening. But what you need to do is don't lose your cool when you're dealing with a debt collector. Keep your calm. Make sure you keep all your records. In fact, going back to the whole zombie debt thing, one of the best defenses when you're dealing with zombie debt, especially if you've paid it off or you've settled with one of the previous collection agencies, keep written documentation that you settled that debt. So that way, anybody that calls you and tries to recollect that debt, when you know you've paid it off, you've got the documentation. You can send it to them. Case closed. It's over. So that's one of the best things to do. So keep everything written down. Keep a transaction of all your conversations with the debt collectors, and then know your rights, and you're well protected there.
Marcy, I know you wanted to add something.
Right. Well, so I was going to piggyback onto what Bruce was saying is that I know in 2009 when we were working on payday lending regulation, which I'd be happy to talk about in a second because it's a big conversation in the legislature right now, Washington also strengthened the laws around debt collection, kind of strengthened sort of the Washington-based statute that is piggybacks off of the FTC stuff that Bruce was talking about. So, you know, really limiting. You can't call people in the middle of the night. You can't call them at their workplace. You can't call them more than X number of times per day or within a 24-hour period, because part of what was happening at the same time that people were dealing with payday lending problems, they were also dealing with debt collection problems and just kind of getting this full assault from debt collectors and from this predatory industry. So there was also Washington laws that strengthened that.
And just one thing to add, too, and to piggyback off of that, I would also say, too, that a lot of debt collectors, what we used to love to do is we used to love to catch people where they least expected it. And so in states where that was allowed, we could call people at work, at their place of employment, and those kind of things. If you're in a situation where your job would be at risk because a debt collector is calling, you have a right to get them to stop. And if you put the request in writing and you send it to the debt collector, those calls are supposed to stop. Now, that's part of the FDCPA. A lot of people don't know that, but you can actually put in writing a request. You need to make sure that you have verification that they received it. So when I tell people to put the request in writing and send it to the debt collector, send it certified mail with a return receipt on it so you have proof that they got the letter.
And that's Julia. All you need.
And that's such a great point, Bruce. And I want to point folks to a really great website that a lot of legal services contribute to. It's called www.washingtonlawhelp.org. And you can click on Consumer in Debt, and there are lots of terrific self-help materials, sample letters to send to a debt collector saying, please stop contacting me. So lots of great resources that touch on the rights that Bruce identified. And I also wanted to say that the FDCPA that he mentioned, the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, in addition to some state laws that protect debtors, those can be really powerful affirmative claims that we can help folks raise in defense to a lawsuit. So even if you owe the money, you have a right not to be harassed, and a whole list of protections that can be very powerful tools against abusive debt collectors.
Okay. Marcy, I'm going to have to come to you really quickly and just give us a little bit of some description about the predatory lending legislation. And I do want Sally to have the last word. So I'm going to come to you, Marcy, just really quick, if you can just kind of give us an update on what is going on with that type of legislation and what we need to know as it relates to that.
Sure, I will do this as quickly as possible. So in 2009, Poverty Action worked with a number of community organizations to pass some regulations around payday lending. We had hoped to get a 36% cap on the amount they could charge, which, frankly, I still think is outrageous. But
yeah, that's
it
pretty
is, yeah,
high
it is what it still, is. It's around 391% now. give or take.
Is that all?
Just that. So we were unable to get an interest rate cap through the legislature. We ended up kind of taking a step back and doing a different approach and limiting the number of loans that the industry could give to a person per year. It's been wildly successful. Washington consumers have saved about $137 million in fees since the law went into effect in 2010. So it's been really successful. And I think probably because of its success, the industry led by MoneyTree, which is a Washington-based payday lender, they desperately would like to repeal or skirt this law. The legislative session is supposed to be over this weekend, and yet we have a new bill that has been introduced after all the cutoffs that is trying to make its way through the legislature that would totally skirt this law. So it's outrageous that this is, you know, still an argument that were happening after reasonable regulations were put in place.
Okay, well, Sally, I'm going to come to you, and I just want you to kind of just make one last statement as it relates to, you know, just as someone who's been through it and kind of now maybe on the other side of it, you know, what are your thoughts about what needs to happen moving forward?
Wow, just sitting here talking about predatory lending, and you're talking about your experience, it felt like I was re-traumatized because it's very shameful. It's very intimidating, and it makes my heart palpitate out of my chest because it like I said, I survived a 10-year abusive relationship. And so the same way I felt that whole 10-year I was married is how I felt whenever a creditor called me. Mm. And you know, as trivial as it is, no one teaches you or talks to you about debt and the consequences of debt. And Bruce and I were talking earlier that, you know, that really should be something that we should push forward as well. It took me falling on my face to look up and go, oh, look, solid ground is right there and they can help me. You know, where I am today is I'm still continuing to work on myself and boosting my self-esteem by trying to pay off whatever debt that I've accumulated that I'm supposed to pay off, like parking tickets that shouldn't have been not left away. Because that does not go away, by the way. And also, I volunteer at Legal Voice, and over 50% of my calls are about predatory lending. And the website that Julia talked about, I highly recommend that because that's where I tell everybody to go to.
Okay.
I'm sorry. And then last thing is, I get it that people want to buy things to show off and make themselves feel better. But I think what I'd like for people to do is think about what it means to live within the means, your means. You know, don't buy a coach person that don't even have $20 in your wallet.
Okay, that's the best place to end it. But I do want to give out some resources for all of the organizations that you guys represent. PovertyAction.org and also Northwest Justice is NWJustice.org. And then ClearPoint Credit Counseling Solutions is ClearPointCreditCounselingSolutions.org. This is Music and Ideas. Thank you so much, Julia, Marcy, Sally, and Bruce, for being in the studio with us today, having this important conversation. All links for those websites will be online.